chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to play out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Rest make dab in the middle of it. Rest make dab in the middle. We are rest make dab.
Secret truth. Through forgiveness, we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. We're going to start off with Greg Reese, and he's talking about only several hundred, 500 or 600 people controlling over 300 million people in this here United States. Quite an insight he has.
In 1984, Charlie Reese of the Orlando Sentinel wrote the following, still true today. 100 senators, 435 congressmen, one president, and 9 Supreme Court justices equates to 545 human beings out of 300 million who are directly, legally, morally, and individually responsible for the domestic problems that plague this country. I excluded the members of the Federal Reserve Board because that problem was created by Congress. In 1913, Congress delegated its constitutional duty to provide a sound currency to a federally chartered but private central bank. I excluded all the special interests and lobbyists for a sound reason. They have no legal authority. They have no ability to coerce a senator, a congressman, or a president to do one cotton-picking thing. I don't care if they offer a politician $1 million in cash. The politician has the power to accept or reject it. No matter what the lobbyist promises, it is the legislator's responsibility to determine how he votes. Those 545 human beings spend much of their energy convincing you that what they did is not their fault. They cooperate in this common con, regardless of party. It seems inconceivable to me that a nation of 300 million cannot replace 545 people who stand convicted by present facts of incompetence and irresponsibility. I can't think of a single domestic problem that is not traceable directly to those 545 people. When you fully grasp the plain truth that 545 people exercise the power of the federal government, then it must follow that what exists is what they want to exist. If the tax code is unfair, it's because they want it unfair. If the budget is in the red, it's because they want it in the red. If the Army and Marines are in Iraq and Afghanistan, it's because they want them in Iraq and Afghanistan. If they do not receive Social Security, but are on an elite retirement plan not available to the people, it's because they want it that way. There are no insoluble government problems. Do not let these 545 people shift the blame to bureaucrats, whom they hire and whose jobs they can abolish. To lobbyists, whose gifts and advice they can reject. To regulators, to whom they give the power to regulate and from whom they can take this power. Above all, do not let them con you into the belief that there exists disembodied mystical forces like the economy, inflation, or politics that prevent them from doing what they take an oath to do. Those 545 people, and they alone, are responsible. They and they alone have the power. They and they alone should be held accountable by the people who are their bosses, provided the voters have the gumption to manage their employees. Reading from Charlie Reese and reporting for InfoWars, this is Greg Reese.
It's quite insightful. Greg Reese's reports are very, very good. Coming up next is a lecture that Ted Gunderson formerly FBI head out on the West Coast, Los Angeles, and other posts that he had out there. Anyway, Ted Gunnarsson had insight in satanic activities and groups and things like that, and he really speaks well in this area and other extended esoteric types of things. But here we go with Ted Gunnarsson.
FBI. I was an FBI agent from December 10, 1951 until I retired March the 30th, 1979. At the time of my retirement, I was in charge of most of Southern California. I had over 700 personnel under my command, budget of $22.5 million. I had 16 offices that I was responsible for. I had a fantastic career. In the old days, the FBI was a great organization. Unfortunately, as I said a few moments ago, it's been infiltrated by the satanic cult Illuminati movement, as well as other agencies like the NSA and the CIA and so forth. And I'll go more into detail on that in a minute. In my FBI career, I point this out to you because I'm establishing credibility. I do have credibility. I was one of the top executives in the FBI in my day. As a matter of fact, I was interviewed for the directorship in 1975 by Attorney General Griffin Bell's people. Of course, they didn't want me. It's very obvious because I'm rather outspoken. But, you know, I was watching TV here not too long ago. It was a couple of years ago, actually. And Brian Gumbel had Jim Nichols, who was Terry Nichols' brother, Terry Nichols being the Oklahoma City conspirator who was convicted and tried and so forth along with McVeigh. And I had given Jim my Oklahoma City report. I made two trips to Oklahoma City. Out of my pocket, I submitted a 222-page report. I've given it to congressmen and senators. Rohrabacher is the most recent one who did an investigation on Oklahoma City bombing here last December. And Jim says to Brian Gumbel, "Have you seen Ted Gunderson's report?" And Brian Gumbel says, "Oh, he's a conspiracy theorist." That's the way he cast me aside. You know, he's wrong. I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I'm a conspiracy realist. There is a conspiracy. And I will prove it to you, and I'll document it. Time is very limited. I'll do the best I can in the next hour or so. But go back to Pearl Harbor. Actually, you can go back further than that. Go back to Pearl Harbor. We knew about Pearl Harbor December the 4th. We were attacked December the 7th. We could have pulled our fleet out of Pearl Harbor. We didn't. I've talked to the naval intelligence officer who intercepted or received that message that the Japanese code had been broken. He passed it up to his superiors. Nothing occurred. After the war, he was subpoenaed by Congress. His superior in the Navy said, "Don't worry about it. Don't go to the hearing." He didn't. Never heard anything more about it. Jack Kennedy assassination, it's well documented. He was murdered by the mob in Chicago, Sam Giancana's group, and also by the CIA. Jack was going to revamp the CIA. He made his personal goals and aims public, to within his circles, of course. And he was going to make some major changes. Also, he had withheld and aborted the invasion of Cuba, which upset some individuals. I recently learned that a fellow named I.B. Hale, who was an All-American football player at Texas Christian, was ordered and was involved. He was an FBI agent at the time, in changing the parade route of the Jack Kennedy group that day. I have information that the night before the Kennedy assassination, there was a secret meeting at the Clint Murchison home, Murchison being an oil man. Those in that meeting included Lyndon Baines Johnson, and I'm sorry to say, and I regret, I know this is true because I've personally documented, I've talked to people who know that this is true. J. Edgar Hoover was there. I was shocked when I learned this, and I only learned this within the last year. And the reason I know is because I talked to the maid that worked in the Murchison home that night. And when Lyndon Johnson came out of that meeting, he says to his girlfriend, Margaret Brown, who wrote a book about this. And I used to have him on a radio talk show in 97, 98, and I had her on my radio talk show. She said, then Johnson told her, after tomorrow, we don't have to worry about that SOB Kennedy. Bobby Kennedy, shot in the kitchen, the Ambassador Hotel, Los Angeles. 5 bullet shots in him. There were 11 shots fired. There were shot supposedly by Saran Saran, and I'm sure he was. Saran was part of it. But Saran Saran's gun would only hold 8 bullets. There were extra bullets in the wall and in the hall and in the door. Covered up. Ruby Ridge, we all know about Randy Weaver. BATF tried to set him up. He wouldn't go along with it. He issued a bench warrant for his arrest. He didn't appear in court. They sent an army out to him. Horiuchi, FBI sharpshooter, murdered his wife in front of the window of the front door. Oklahoma City, I personally, as I said, made 2 trips to Oklahoma City. I was told by an inside investigator now, somebody that was on the inside, that there were at least 11 other people involved in Oklahoma City. The fertilizer bomb was a myth. There was no fertilizer bomb. Ridiculous. It was an ammonia nitrate, it was an electrohydrodynamic gaseous fuel device, a highly classified bomb that was tested in the early 1980s, 1982 as a matter of fact, in Area 51. The explosion was underestimated. It was so powerful it killed one of the technicians. I happen to have personal knowledge of that particular bomb. I'll call it the barometric bomb. The government covered it up. I have, in my archives at home, by the way, I have over 300 boxes of research. I have my videotapes of the news broadcast the afternoon of Oklahoma City. The broadcasters on the TV stations in Oklahoma City, every one of them said, they're bringing unexploded devices out of the building. One of them said, now we're going to find out who's behind this, because one of the unexploded devices has U.S. Army stencil on it. That's right. And, of course, you and I know that McVeigh and Nichols could not possibly have been in there that morning and planted those devices. What I think was planned was the barometric bomb was to go off, a very highly explosive bomb. It's manufactured by the Hercules Manufacturing Company in Silicon Valley, developed by Michael Reconosciuto, a friend of mine, who's now in prison because he dared to testify against Congress, the Brooks Committee. And they set him up on a drug operation, first offense, 30 years. Michael was an intelligence agent for some 20 years, one of my closest friends. I go visit him regularly at Terminal Island in San Pedro, California. That bomb was developed by Michael and his father, Hercules Manufacturing in Silicon Valley. It was a directional bomb, and if you look at the pictures of Oklahoma City, you'll see where half the building was taken away. It was like a half moon. Well, the 4 unexploded devices that were taken out of there, by the way, it's documented in a magazine article called Firehouse Magazine, September 1995. The editor of that magazine wrote the article based on information furnished to him by the Oklahoma City Fire Department. And in there, he says, and he has a time schedule, that on certain times, these unexploded devices were taken out of the building. There was a plan, in my opinion, to explode the barometric bomb, followed up by a series of bombs, and to bring that whole building down like they did 9-1-1. There was no question about it. They had planned, they meaning the New World Order boys, and I'm going to go more into that in just a minute, to bring that whole Oklahoma City building down. We had Waco. It's kind of interesting because we know Posse Comitatus. It's against the law for the federal government to use military against civilian personnel, violation of the law. Yet they brought military personnel in. And it's kind of interesting because I know those of you who have looked at the Waco case, realize that there were 4 BATF agents who were killed in Waco. All 4 of those agents, in my research, took headshots. How many military men do we have out there? Raise your hand. What does that indicate to you? Sniper. Right? They were shot by snipers. Four headshots to four BATF agents. One of the headshots went from above down in through his lips and down into his body. From above. There was a helicopter there by the government. Further research established that those four BATF agents at one time were bodyguards for Bill Clinton. Larry, Oklahoma City again. I'm going to go back to Oklahoma City. Terry Nichols, most recently, again, the co-conspirator in the Oklahoma City case, recently submitted, in fact, January 19th, submitted a document, an affidavit in the courts in Salt Lake City that Larry Watts, number two man in the FBI, actually orchestrated Oklahoma City. You don't see this in the mainstream media, do you? The 1993 World Trade Center bombing of the February 26, 1993. There's an article in the New York Times. I have a copy of this article. It's October 23, 1993, New York Times. And it states that the FBI had an informant in among the terrorists, Salam, and he was commissioned by the terrorists to put the bomb together. He went to his FBI handler, supervisor, told him he was the one to put the bomb together. He'd been commissioned by the terrorists. We're going to use a dummy bomb, aren't we? His FBI handler said, no, we're going to use a real bomb. The FBI not only knew in advance that they were going to bomb the World Trade Center, car bomb the World Trade Center, the FBI furnished the ingredients for the bomb. It was in the New York Times, L.A. Times. Now, what I don't understand is, do not the senators and the congressmen of the United States read those two newspapers? Right? Somebody should have looked into that and conducted an honest investigation. But then, after all, we have 911. Do you think there was an honest investigation there? Absolutely not. 911. My friend Mike Reconosciuto, intelligence agent for two decades. In the spring of 1986, I was contacted by a former top Reagan administrator, Bill Sloan, who's now dead, so I'll use his name. Bill said, can you help the Afghan rebels in their fight against the Soviets? Knowing Mike and knowing his background, I contacted Mike. I said, let's see if we can help the fellows out over there, beat the communists. So we had a meeting with the fellow from the State Department /CIA in Los Angeles. Mike and I did. He brought along a fourth individual. Fourth individual was Tim Osman. And he didn't say much. He was tall, slender, clean-shaven. And Mike and this fellow from Washington, D.C. talked. I sat in the background. And long story short, Michael was able to put together a package and provided the Afghan rebels the surface-to-air missiles that defeated the Soviets in Afghanistan. Also, Mike learned in his contacts working with the Arabs that our government gave the Afghan rebels $650 million a year for 5 years. No question about it in my mind. They're using that money today against us. Okay. They defeated the communists over there. And as a result of Mike's contact with these individuals, he developed sources in the Middle East, Arab friends. He had, even though he's in prison because he testified against the Department of Justice on the Promise Software case, and I don't have time to go into details here, but the Promise Software is dealt by Bill and Nancy Hamilton out of Washington, D.C., and this software, this computer, keeps track of everything you can imagine. The Department of Justice took it for 2 years at the tune of $10 million. And then at the end of 2 years, refused to pay the Hamiltons. The Brooks Committee had a hearing on it. And Mike was called to testify because he put a trap door in the computer. And then when the Department of Justice refused to pay the Hamiltons, a fellow named Earl Bryant, past president of United Press International, took that computer and sold it around the world to countries all over the world with that trap door in it. Of course, these countries didn't know that there was a trap door there, but the Brooks Committee was looking into this. This is in the late 1980s. 3 weeks before Mike was to testify, he received a telephone call, he claims, from a fellow named Peter Vitniks, Department of Justice. If you testify, you'll be sorry. He testified. Shortly thereafter, he was arrested for drugs, claimed he had a methamphetamine laboratory, 30 years, as I mentioned. Anyway, in spite of the fact that he's in prison, he still had these contacts in the Arab world. And when he was in Coleman, Florida, the federal penitentiary, he had access to the computer. And a very, very brilliant fellow, high IQ, and a very cagey individual, very competent, very capable. Mike developed these sources inside the Arab world. Now, he's in prison in Terminal Island now, but at the time, he was at White Deer, Pennsylvania, Federal Correction Institute. He tried to get to the FBI, tried to get to the Department of Justice, tried to get the word to the proper authorities because Mike developed information, advanced information, about 911. As a matter of fact, on February the 5th, 2001, Mike wrote a letter to his attorney, Don Bailey, Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. I have developed sources inside the Arab world. They're about to attack us. I have detailed information. I have a copy of that letter, and it's certified, February 6, 2001. Nobody would talk to Mike. Finally, his attorney, Lou Bufardi in Chicago, wrote to the attorney, Colin Powell, and said, I have a client who has information about terrorist activities. And they sent in a fellow named Keith Kutry from the FBI in Williamsport, Pennsylvania. And at that time, Mike told him who was head of the terrorist movement in the United States, an electrical engineer out of Paterson, New Jersey, who has since gone back to the Middle East. Gave him details about forthcoming attacks in the United States by the Arabs, terrorist attacks, and so forth. Gave the FBI an informant who was preparing false IDs for 4,500 terrorists around the world. The FBI did not interview him. 911 occurred, much to Mike's surprise. He thought he had done his part as an American citizen. And then they interviewed this individual 2 days. They came back and interviewed Michael 2 days afterwards and later interviewed this individual who was preparing these false passports, IDs, and threatened him with prosecution, deported him, and sent him back.
Omega-3 fatty acids are needed for optimal strength, and they can only be obtained through diet. They can be found in grass-fed beef, which is why the ruling class is trying to ban it, and they can be found in fish, which are arguably the best source of omega-3s. But the problem today is finding fish without a high mercury content. Your best option is our Ultimate Fish Oil and Ultimate Krill Oil at InfoWarsStore.com. Omega-3 fatty acids are essential for both our neurological and cardiovascular systems, our brain and our heart. They improve mood, mental clarity, and immune function. Get your essential omega-3 fatty acids from the best sources available. Ultimate Fish Oil and Ultimate Krill Oil. Get some today at InfoWarsStore.com.
We had another individual, General Ownby, out of Fort Sill, Oklahoma, back in 1982. I'm just giving you some examples of the conspiracy. There is a conspiracy, folks. There's no question about it. These are just some examples. I'm going to go more into detail. General Ownby was responsible for the biggest drug bust in the history of the Army, Fort Sill, Oklahoma. He went to work one night late. He was working. His wife didn't come. He didn't come home. They found him the next day out in the hallway hung. He had his uniform, his jacket, neatly placed next to him. There was no suicide note. His hands were tied behind him. And the Army said he committed suicide. Now, the question is, did he tie his hands behind him before or after he hung himself? Okay. We had Ron Brown, Secretary of Commerce. He came in. He went on a flight. He was involved in a serious financial investigation. Larry, I think, had the detailed knowledge of this. And he was ordered to take a trip around the world, goodwill trip of some sort. The plane came in on a beam into the mountain. There was a survivor, Kitty Kelly, a flight attendant. She broke her neck. She survived the crash, but she was found later with a broken neck. The man in the tower committed suicide right afterwards. Two pathologists said he had a bullet hole in his head the size of a .45 caliber. These are just a few of the... And then Gary Webb, you remember Gary Webb? He was the one who was responsible for exposing the CIA drug operation in the South Central L.A. He was ruled a suicide. He shot himself in the head twice.
I interviewed Ted Gunderson all before he passed away up in the Dallas area. And he was a real person, a good person, a great person. And he was a wonderful man and really cared about this country. Okay, coming up next is an interview that Maria Bartiromo had with Ron Johnson. In fact, she says in there that she used ivermectin to get well. Boy, this is quite an interview, so listen closely. Here we go next with Ron Johnson, interviewed by Maria Bartiromo.
Joining me right now is Wisconsin Senator Ron Johnson. He's a member of the Senate Homeland Security and the ranking member of the Senate Permanent Subcommittee on Investigations. He was among the first senators to really open up this inquiry into Biden family influence peddling. And, Senator, it's good to see you. You've been working on this for a long time. Your thoughts on these bank records and these 176 suspicious activity reports, which suggest Joe Biden has been taking and Hunter Biden have been taking money in from foreigners for years.
Good morning, Maria. We've known this. Senator Grassley and I laid out the vast web of financial foreign entanglements of the Bidens in our report in September 2020. The media ignored our report. Our ranking members, by the way, the Democrats' colleagues, during our investigation, accused us of soliciting and disseminating Russian disinformation. I wish Senator Warren would have prodded them to help us in our investigation. We could have uncovered even more back in 2020. When the American people might have then been made fully aware of the fact that Joe Biden would be highly compromised as president, but they didn't do that. Instead, they did everything they could to sabotage our investigation.
Yeah, so increasingly you're seeing House members, given this evidence that we are talking about, increasingly House members want an inquiry into impeachment for Joe Biden. What happens if it happens and then comes to the Senate? Does it die in the Senate?
Well, hopefully an impeachment inquiry would give the House greater powers of accessing information. The problem we always have, certainly Senator Grassley and I had, when we were doing our investigations, is you'd go to the Justice Department, you'd go to the FBI, and they'd say, well, we'd love to cooperate with you, but we have an active investigation. That was the way they were able to insulate themselves from scrutiny. They're expert at doing that. So you need documents, you need information before you sit down and question and depose witnesses. Otherwise, the witnesses can just kind of skirt around to all your questions. So you need that documented evidence to really complete an investigation. It's very difficult to do when the administration holds all the cards, and we know we have leftist partisans in those federal law enforcement agencies that are covering up for the Bidens.
Well, it's a good point, because in the middle of all of this information, from the witness testimony to the bank records to the suspicious activity reports, we've got the DOJ attacking Donald Trump. Special Counsel Jack Smith is proposing that the former president's 2020 election trial start on January 2nd of next year. That's just a few weeks before the Iowa caucus, and it is a month before the Nevada and South Carolina primaries, Senator. So, Jack Smith wants Trump on trial while his competitors campaign.
Well, this is the third election in a row that federal law enforcement will be interfering in our presidential election. They did it in 2016. They did it in 2020. They quite honestly did it in my 2022 Senate reelection campaign here in Wisconsin. Now they're going to do it again in 2024. And the media is corrupt and complicit in this. I noticed a report by ABC News where they're basically downplaying all the information, the new details that James Comer is revealing, and saying, well, this is all covered in Senator Grassley and Senator Johnson's report back in September 20. In other words, downplaying by saying, well, this is all old news. We've known all this. And, of course, with all that in the public domain in 2020, the Bidens weren't prosecuted, so there must be nothing there. That is the game plan of the media to continue to downplay the severity of the the corruption of the Bidens and how they're going to move, just try and move on.
Yeah, but what are you going to do about it? What can you do about it? Because the censorship does not stop there. I mean, they are in the White House creating their narrative and running with it. Whether it has to do with Trump, whether it has to do with Biden and the money he's taken in, whether it has to do with COVID. We learned this morning that the FDA is now saying that it's okay to take ivermectin if you have COVID. I mean, Senator, I remember talking with you repeatedly during COVID about your upset that you were they were trying to cancel you because you were talking to doctors to try to find out the right ways to treat COVID without having to get too many boosters and COVID shots. I remember I took ivermectin, and, you know, it was hard to do because initially the pharmacist wanted to report my doctor, and he didn't want to, you know, I mean, I had to, like, it was hard to find my doctor to finally, address this and prescribe ivermectin. He did. My COVID was gone in a day when I took ivermectin, and now 3 years later, the FDA says, oh, yeah, that's fine, take ivermectin. What?
And Marie, you know the doctors I've been dealing with and talking to for years now. They believe that probably hundreds of thousands of Americans lost their lives because they were denied early treatment. And they were denied it because the FDA sabotaged, for example, ivermectin, and they said, come on, y'all, you're not a cow, you're not a horse. You know, this was supposedly horse medicine. No, this was a Nobel Prize-winning medicine that could have saved hundreds of thousands of lives. It did save many, many lives because people, you did have doctors with the courage to and the compassion to actually treat patients using it and putting at risk their medical license. But, you know, fortunately, you say, what can we do? Well, you know, we do have reporters like yourself, like John Solomon, other people that have the courage to report the truth against the mainstream media and against the narrative. But that's the only way this is going to be solved, is we need the truth to be exposed. We need more Americans to listen to the truth, to be exposed to the truth, to pull their heads out of the sand, quite honestly, open up their eyes and understand what is happening in this country. We are going down a very dangerous path, but as a path is being laid out and planned by an elite group of people that want to take total control over our lives. And that's what they're doing bit by bit. They do it by increasing massive government spending, increase the size of government, takeover of the WHO. These amendments that are coming up that are going to be voted on in 2024 on the WHO are frightening, and they really risk taking away all of our sovereignty. People have to awaken to the dangers of the moment.
I mean, it's just extraordinary to me that, the government was working with social media to amplify lies and suppress truth and has been doing so repeatedly. I mean, you know, we just saw the Facebook story, the Twitter files, all of the time, all the way government officials from the CDC, the FBI, you know, CIA, I mean, 1,000 people, according to the reporters working on the Twitter files, worked with social media to amplify lies and suppress truth. Why couldn't the American people know that, you know, there were other alternatives to treat COVID? Why can't the American people know that there were side effects with the vaccine?
This was all pre-planned by an elite group of people. That's what I'm talking about. Event 201 that occurred in late 2019 prior to the rest of us knowing about this pandemic. Again, yeah. This is very concerning in terms of what has happened, what is happening, what continues to be planned for our loss of freedom. Again, it needs to be exposed, but unfortunately, there are very few people, even in Congress, that are willing to take a look at this. They all push the vaccine. They don't want to, be made aware of the fact that the vaccines might have caused injuries, might have caused death. So many people just simply don't want to admit they were wrong, and they're going to do everything they can to make sure that they're not proven wrong. We're up against a very powerful group of people here, Maria.
Yeah, and they are loud, the loudest ones in the room on social media. They cancel people. They attack you for trying to search for the truth. And some people get scared, and they don't want to deal with this kind of scrutiny. Let me move on to foreign policy, another mess. The U.S. has reportedly reached a deal with Iran to release Iranian Americans who have been held hostage in the country. The administration is going to unfreeze nearly $6 billion in Iranian assets and release a handful of Iranian nationals serving prison sentences, Senator. What is your take on this deal to give unleash $6 billion to the leading sponsor of terrorism, Iran?
Well, it's going to result in exactly what you think it would result in, more hostage taking. Again, we want to see hostages freed, but this is not the way to do it because you're just going to encourage the taking of more hostages. I think that's pretty obvious, and that's what's been happening with Iran under the Obama administration and the Biden administration. They keep pumping in billions of dollars into the largest state sponsor of terror, and the only thing it's done in terms of Iranians' behavior is it's made it worse. It certainly hasn't made Iran behave better. So it just simply doesn't work. You do achieve peace through strength. And if you take a look at what Biden has done, every policy he has initiated in his administration has weakened America. The open borders, the war on fossil fuel, the record gasoline prices, 40-year high inflation, the embarrassing and dangerous surrender in Afghanistan, all of these things have weakened America and emboldened our enemy. If you set out to plan, how to weaken America, you couldn't have come up with a better game plan than what the Biden administration has implemented. It makes you wonder.
Yeah, and that's why we are wondering. We are wondering if the president is compromised.
Well, that's certainly what Senator Grassley and I tried to warn America. When you have a president where you see all these transfers of wealth between his family members and China and Russia and Ukraine and Kazakhstan, those are real things. That was verified. There was nothing in our report that's ever been proven untrue, including, quite honestly, Amos Hochstein, Joe Biden setting up a meeting between Hunter Biden and Amos to talk about the situation in Iran. So we proved that Joe Biden had been lying to the American public. We proved that in September 2020, but it was all ignored. It was all called Russian disinformation. Sound familiar?
Right. Russia, Russia, Russia. Meanwhile, China is eating our lunch. Senator, thank you. We'll keep a spotlight on all of that. Senator Ron Johnson this morning.
Tucker Carlson was fired from Fox. He's done some of his finest work, but he was provided videos by the Speaker of the House on January 6th, the riot or whatever you want to call it, there in front of the Capitol. So he's interviewing today during this interview, and there's just a short clip, and I'll put up the embedded interview so you'll be able to see the whole interview because it's worth seeing and listening to the whole thing. Is that the head of the Capitol Police knew what was going on, and much later, after retiring and so forth, he's been sort of a whistleblower in exposing it, and he says it was a setup job. So here we go with Tucker Carlson interviewing the former Capitol Police chief.
Yep. This looks like a scam.
I mean, it's
just saying.
It just gets more convoluted. I do. I feel so bad for the men and women in the police department, what they went through. I feel so bad for the intelligence analysts and what they went through. Many of them, it was really, really bad. I feel bad for the officials that were either demoted, forced to resign over this, forced to retire early. There's a lot of people that need someone. I think an outside entity needs to come in and do some investigation about what went on with.
We already had. We've had many entities doing investigations. Yeah. I believe we impaneled this committee or commission, this body of members of Congress, that went on for about a year and was on the news every single night. Did they address any of these questions?
No, sir.
How could you have a January 6th commission whose job it is to figure out what happened on January 6th not get to the bottom of, like, why the head of intelligence at Capitol Police didn't pass on the intelligence, why the chief of Capitol Police was kept in the dark and denied support from the U.S. military, why Yogananda Pittman wound up, after failing on January 6th, getting a high-paying job right across Nancy Pelosi's district? Like, who wouldn't ask these questions?
Yeah, well, I know there's people on the Hill still trying to ask those questions, and hopefully they can get answers. But it looks like they keep running into roadblock after roadblock after roadblock. But it's hard to believe 2.5 years later, we're still at this point. I still think somebody along the line is going to find, the smoking gun, the missing puzzle piece, and puts this together, but it does. When you look at it, and there's still so much more to it, it just begins to raise more and more questions.
It's just, it's interesting to talk to you because, this, again, this is my assessment, but you seem like a very straight arrow guy.
I try.
Well, it comes off you in waves. So, and I mean that as a compliment, but like how long did it take you to realize there's something very strange going on here?
I knew there was something strange going on pretty soon. When I was running into the issues with them not wanting me to testify, I was like, this starts getting a little weird. And then when I started sitting down and talking to officers and getting information and finding out from some of the intelligence that was out there and where it was and seeing some of the emails of the intelligence analysts pushing it up to their officials, I knew something was fishy. I mean, think about it. How can somebody not look at all this and think something's odd?
So, I mean, we have a media whose job it is to get to the bottom of questions like these, or at least to ask the questions of knowledgeable people with relevant experience, and you're at the top of that list. We interviewed you, never aired, at a previous job, but how many other long interviews have you done with media outlets?
Long ones, not very many. I actually can't think of any. I've done 60 minutes. That's probably about the longest.
And how long, from your 60 minutes interview, how much of your account wound up on television, do you think, estimate?
Three or four minutes.
So you're the chief of Capitol Police on January 6th. Common sense suggests you'd be the first person that any reporter trying to figure out what happened on January 6th would call.
You'd think.
Is your cell phone buzzing day and night from curious reporters trying to find the truth?
No, it's calmed down. I mean, the first couple of days were something else, but it's really calmed down. And, you know, I'm not stupid when it comes to law enforcement. I've been in law enforcement for 30 years. I've done everything from capturing homicide suspects to doing, you know, barricade situations. This didn't have to happen. This was screwed up from the get-go. Didn't have to happen. Numerous opportunities to prevent it from happening. Numerous opportunities from preventing my men and women from going through what they had to, and it never happened. There was never that opportunity to stop that train.
There's always a concern that politics will infect law enforcement and the justice system more broadly. And I think you've thought about this. It's one of the reasons I think you said we need to be strictly apolitical in the way we administer law enforcement. It does seem like things have changed. And it does seem like politics affect the way we enforce the law. Does it feel that way to you?
That's one of the things that many things that are in here. I talk about the 2020 riots versus the January 6th attack.
The riots in front of the White House were famously St. John's Church was set on fire.
Well, White House, across the country, you know, I talk about the White House, and I talk about an agency that was formed by Congress specifically for the protection of the United States President, the Washington, D.C. Police Department. The White House is under attack, and they are prevented. I know it's not from Chief Newsom. It's from his, you know, he was the chief at the time. It would have been from above him. They're from prevented from going on White House grounds and helping the United States Secret Service in defending the White House. So think about that. You know,
who made that decision?
Again, all I know is, you know, Newsom's hands were tied. So Mayor Bowser, higher? I don't know. But think about that.
Somebody told when there, and there was real rioting. In fact, I think that more officers were injured at that riot than were injured on January 6th, I think.
Yep. Again, don't take my word. GAO report. More officers injured at the protest up by the White House than on January 6th. And I'm told by Park Police, all charges were dropped, according to the fighting at Lafayette Park and at the White House. There were Secret Service agents bloodied and battered over there. There was a number of federal agencies that were hurt. Structures set on fire. They tried to light the Hay Adams Hotel on fire that was occupied. Think about that. Charges dropped. No such situation. I mean, when you look at the disparity of how justice is being applied, again, that's scary. That becomes really scary when it becomes politicized like that, and that's what appears to have happened.
I mean, it sounds like Trump is the key to all of this. If Trump hadn't been the president, things would have been very responses would have been very different, don't you think? I mean, if Barack Obama had been president, do you think that someone would have told MPD, the Washington, D.C. Police Department, they couldn't protect the White House?
Protect the White House? I see what you're saying there. I don't know. I mean, I think not.
Look, I mean, it's a hypothetical. I shouldn't ask you to answer hypothetical questions, but it does seem seems a little amazing. Last question. Thank you for doing this again. Really appreciate it. This is important, and I hope that everyone who's interested in January 6th and its aftermath, which really has changed the country, will watch this interview. But looking back after spending your entire life in law enforcement, how have your views changed after January 6th?
Yeah, that's a big question. I mean, my views of law enforcement, I still think law enforcement is a very honorable profession. I really, really do. I think it's being screwed up in a lot of cities. I feel bad for a lot of people that are going into it. We need good cops. But right now, their hands are being tied. When you look at what law enforcement's going on, I mean, I was just talking with somebody who, one of their officers in Washington, D.C., arrested somebody, went to a scene of a robbery, recovered a weapon, recovered somebody else's wallet in possession with the suspect, made the arrest, papered a gun, went in a person's pocket, and during the search, found a loaded handgun, went down to papers, no paper. No paper, armed robbery. Means all charges were dropped. That's bad. That's bad when we're seeing the type of crime that we're seeing in some of these cities, and they're not prosecuting some of these cases. I feel sorry for the officers. It's, you know, very dangerous for them. I still, love the profession, still love the officers with the Capitol Police, Washington, D.C. Police, still talk to them regularly. They're going through a lot, and I just don't think they're getting the backing they need.
No, they're not. And the effects on the rest of us are...
Man, we're seeing it.
Stephen Sund, former chief of Capitol Police, thank you so much.
Thank you very much for having me on.
Appreciate it.
Young people say the news is full of lies.
And Kennedy's motorcade.
239
people. The death of Jeffrey Epstein.
Coming up next is something that was recorded today at the Iowa State Fair, and Robert Kennedy was there, Jr. And this may be a little bit hard to hear, so go back and play it over. I won't be putting up the embedded part of this, so you'll have to listen to it, and I'll get it up and as well as I can and make it as fairly understandable as I can. But here we go, Robert F. Kennedy, Jr., out at the State Fairgrounds talking about the Ukrainian situation.
You're running to unseat a Democrat, and you're running as a Democrat. My question to you is, what's your biggest issue with President Biden's leadership?
The censorship, the war, and putting neocons, war mongering neocons in charge of our foreign policy, and putting Wall Street in charge of our domestic policy and our economy.
So what would you do differently?
I would do everything differently. I would negotiate with the Russians, which is what they've wanted to do from day one. The Russians signed a peace agreement in March of 2022, which we just found out about, and Zelensky initialed it. And the Russians were actually withdrawing their troops in March of 2022 and April of 2022. And President Biden sent Boris Johnson to Kiev to blow up that agreement. And since then, 135,000 kids, Ukrainian kids, have died, and 50,000 Russian kids. My son went over to Ukraine and fought in the Kharkiv offensive. He was a machine gunner in a special forces unit. And so, I'm deeply concerned with the welfare of the people in Ukraine. I admire their valor. They died unnecessarily to fulfill an ambition of the United States, which was to use Ukraine in a proxy war with Russia. In fact, when President Biden was asked about what the purpose of the war was, he said, regime change in Russia. When Lloyd Austin, his Secretary of Defense, was asked in April 2022, right after they blew up the agreement, why are we in Ukraine? He said, to exhaust the Russian army and degrade its capacity to fight anywhere else in the world. That is not about Ukrainian freedom. It is about using Ukraine in a proxy war, in a geopolitical dispute between two great powers.
Are you saying that it's the United States' fault that Russia invaded Ukraine?
No, I'm not. I'm not making any excuse for Vladimir Putin. His invasion was illegal. It was brutal, and he had other options. But did we deliberately provoke the action? Yes, we did. Again and again and again, we would not allow Zelensky to sign the Minsk Accords in 2019. Zelensky ran as the peace candidate. He's a comedian. He's an actor, which I'm not disparaging because that's what my wife does. But he had never been in politics. But he won with 70% of the vote. Why? Because he ran promising that he would sign the Minsk Accords, which were already agreed to by Russia, by France, and by Germany. And then the United States, our White House, went over there and we would not let him sign. If we had let him sign, this war would have never happened and all those kids would be alive today.
So there were two different Minsk Accords. You talked in the past about how we could use that as a structure for Americans, but obviously it wasn't able to prevent the war initially. I'm just wondering, why do you think that the Minsk Accords would be able to stop
it? I'm not arguing that the Minsk Accords today would still work. I don't think the Russians would agree to the Minsk Accords today, but the Minsk Accords didn't work before because we wouldn't let them work. The Russians weren't going to let them work. Germany was going to. France and Zelensky was going to. So they worked for everybody except for the neocons in the White House who wanted this war.
What's your path to go, sir? What would you do to end this war?
I would negotiate with the Russians.
What would that include?
Well, I wouldn't tell you. You keep asking me questions that it would be crazy for me to answer. You never. I negotiate for a living. I've settled hundreds of lawsuits. You never tell what you're going to negotiate for before you negotiate. So I would say my answer to that is strategic ambiguity.
Mr. Kennedy,
on Ukraine, other candidates have gone there recently. Yeah, I would love to go to Ukraine.
Mr. Kennedy, since we're closer to nuclear war now than ever before, since given this crisis, would you support a policy of no first use of nukes?
Yeah, well, I would, but here's the thing. What you're saying is really important. Because the Russian, we are provoking. Not only have we made the worst geopolitical mistake, which is to push the Russians into an embrace of China, which is the worst geopolitical outcome that we can imagine. We've essentially fueled the creation of BRICS, where 40 nations are now threatening to get off of the dollar as the world reserve currency. If that continues, then that will make the Great Depression look like a cakewalk for us. But the Russians also, most importantly, have more nukes than we do. They have at least 1,000 more nuclear weapons than we do, and many people argue that their weapons are much better than ours, that they have anti-ballistic weapons that actually work, that will stop incoming missiles from hitting Russia, and that ours are much inferior. So why are we provoking a war with a nuclear superpower? Why are we settling this from the beginning?
We're going to end our program tonight with Brave New World, a 10-minute review by Jay Dyer, but I'll put up the whole.
Our next book in 10 minutes is the infamous Brave New World, written in 1932 by Aldous Huxley, one of the global elite that we've highlighted in many of our videos. And of course, you can't get into this book and understand it without understanding that it's a real plan. He says at the beginning of this book in the introductory essay that you shouldn't think of this as a pure fiction story, but rather as a story about how the future will actually be. And he knew this because his brother, for example, Julian, wrote the philosophy of UNESCO. And that means that the global institutions that were being set up at that time were literally formulated and given their ethos, their impetus by people like the Huxleys and the Rockefellers. So we should pay attention to the kind of world that they say is being erected. The first thing that he mentions in the introductory essay is that the world that will come to be is going to be based on the utilitarian happiness principle. You being in a coon pod, you getting your feelies, and you getting intravenous vitamins pumped into you in your coffin apartment by Mark Zuckerberg. It's going to be great when you're in the coon pod and I can put vitamins in you intravenously, right? That kind of a world is what we're talking about. And that's what Brave New World describes, a world where humans are controlled on the basis of the pleasure principle. And so one of the things that is mandated in Brave New World is that you cannot turn people down for lovey-dovey time. You have to sleep with everybody, because if you don't, you're a bigot. So it's almost like mandated, state-mandated humping time. The book begins with the structures that they put in place in London to control what they call a world socialist dictatorship. It's a Soviet-style slash pleasure principle future where everything is free in the sense of you have universal basic income, this kind of a thing. And humans come to be in this world state, so it's a global government, on the basis of hatcheries, or they come out of pods, they come out of labs. Nobody is born in a normal mother or female way. So there's already, you can see, a kind of a displacement of gender, a displacement of classical biology. What we have here is a kind of a clone army, right, where the human population is now disconnected. And one of the reasons for that, according to Huxley, was that if you don't have a mom and a dad, then your new mommy, daddy, nanny state becomes the stand-in for your parents and your archetypal familial structure. So in other words, the total control of population and reduction is the centerpiece of this whole future society of Brave New World. It's a neo-Pavlovian social Darwinian system wherein everybody in the book has a name typically that's significant in terms of the philosophy of the book. For example, there's Lenina, and she's named after Lenin. There's Bernard Marx, named after Karl Marx. So the society that we're speaking about here is one that has perfected the scientific technique of social engineering. And there's even references to MKUltra where they talk about electroshocking infants to condition them. So social conditioning is something that has been absolutely perfected. And it's used on a mass scale for the whole world. And we know that the chief antagonist, the character Mustafa Mond, who is one of several world socialist controllers, speaks at length of all of these techniques. We have other Fabian socialists being mentioned, like George Bernard Shaw, as the model for this world system that they've built. And it's also important to keep in mind that it's a technocracy. This technocracy has divided society into specific, clear categories of hierarchies, alphas, betas, gammas, deltas, etc. You're color-coded in this system, and so the irony is that the revolutions that have occurred since, say, the French Revolution were supposedly about equality and fairness, liberty, equality, fraternity. However, in reality, as Huxley shows in his novel, the final revolution, which is the final Brave New World society, that is the final revolution. When it comes in, it will actually be one based on a rigid scientific hierarchy, a genetic, eugenic-based hierarchy. In this system, there is a new world religion, and amazingly, the world religion that's concocted and created revolves around odd hallucinogenic drugs that are kind of combined with something like MDMA. It's unclear, but it's a made-up drug called Soma that has the effects of those two, LSD and MDMA. But they have an SEX magic ritual. I thought that was interesting because, if you don't know, of course, Huxley was in the circles of Aleister Crowley, and they were friends. And they actually went to parties together, and so I would assume that that's where he got this new Soma sacrament of magical butt sex. Humans are viewed in this society as a zoo, and they have to thus be culled on a mass scale, population tightly controlled. In fact, there's even references to Whitehall as the control office.